Course is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on Building Bridges, Occupy Wall Street activists, including Pulitzer Prize-winning author-activist Christopher Hedges, arrested at Goldman Sachs headquarters in New York City.
But first, at a time when U.S. corporations are stockpiling cash, it's outrageous that state lawmakers have the audacity to make jobless workers pay for decades of irresponsible business tax breaks that ultimately undermine state unemployment insurance finances.
But corporate lobbyists have ushered through legislative measures behind closed doors with no public debate of cuts to state unemployment insurance programs when more people are out of work for longer than any other time in generations.
We had better wake up and smell the coffee, realize the consequences of what will be drastic measures before our unemployment benefits are no longer there when we need them. Now, unraveling the unemployment insurance lifeline with George Wentworth, senior staff attorney at the National Employment Law Project. Why don't we begin this process of parsing out first really what you have learned in your recent reports about who the unemployed are, what levels of income, and so on, just to make sure we get all of that under our belt without any mythologies.
Sure. Obviously, the recession began the end of 2007, and we've seen record levels of unemployment peaking probably in mid-2009, but unemployment has been over 9% or in the 9% range for 26 consecutive months, and unemployed workers are facing major hurdles to getting back into the labor market. So right now there are about 14 million sort of officially unemployed workers in the country. About 7.5 million are collecting some form of unemployment benefits, but there are certainly other workers who are sort of partially unemployed, that is, who are working part-time when they would rather be working full-time, or who have sort of dropped out of the labor market because they've just found it too difficult to find a job. And since the recession began in late 2007, there were about 8.7 million jobs lost before the recovery technically began about 2 years ago. But only about 1.8 million of those jobs have come back. So that leaves about a deficit of about 7 million jobs that are not here, that were around before the recession began in 2007. And when you factor in the growth of the population and the labor force, really the economy should have grown about another 4 million jobs in the last 4 years. So we're really talking about an actual jobs deficit of about 11 million jobs, and it's just it's taken a toll on the American worker, particularly older workers who have basically been turned out by their employers with 20, 25 years of experience and are just not finding comparable employment in their industries or really anywhere else.
Now, unemployment insurance is a lifeline in this process when people are put out of work. And normally during a non-recessionary time, it's 26 weeks, it's administered, I believe, by the states. But during the recession, it's up to 99 weeks because of federal extensions. But your report says that different states are cutting back on that unemployment insurance. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. I mean, you said it out pretty accurately. The basic state benefit program, which is the one that is funded by employer taxes, is supposed to provide 26 weeks of benefits. It's been that way since at least the 1950s. The sort of the expectation that in terms of involuntary unemployment, and this is a federal state program, has its origins in the Social Security Act, so it's been around for 75 years, but that the expectation is the state would basically cover a normal bout of unemployment between jobs, which is normally the cap on that's about 26 weeks. And practically every state has had a 26-week program And then when things get bad in terms of the unemployment rate rising nationally, Congress has historically weighed in 8 different times in the last 50 years and created differing programs of federal extensions, and the current extensions now, they actually vary. It can be up to an additional 73 weeks, but it is also as low as 34 weeks in some states with low unemployment. So there's a certain amount of confusion out there about, you know, where do the state benefits end and the federal begin. But it's against this backdrop that we have seen states start cutting their basic 26-week program. And the context for this is the fact that about 30 state unemployment trust funds have basically gone broke sometime in the last couple of years. So currently there are 30 states that are borrowing from the federal government in order to pay state unemployment benefits, and those 30 states have borrowed about $40 billion. And what's happening is those states that are insolvent, as they're coming to their legislators are convening around this issue, they're saying, how do we get our trust fund on good footing again? They're not looking at sort of the underlying structural problems with their financing. They're going right at unemployed workers. So in the last 5 months, we've seen 3 states cut the 26-week program down to 20 weeks maximum benefits. That's Michigan, Missouri, and South Carolina. And then Florida has reduced it to 23, but has actually adopted a sliding scale based on the state's unemployment rate, which could drop the maximum down as low as 12 weeks, which is fairly shocking. And Illinois and Arkansas have made some similar, had some smaller cuts. But again, this has been a national standard. So we're seeing, I think, in business interests in state legislatures basically kind of blaming the victim and putting sort of unequal burden on unemployed workers to dig out of this problem that really the workers did not cause.
One of the things that has certainly been really pronounced is the fact that there are people who have been searching for jobs now. The average unemployed worker has been searching for a job for more than 40.4 weeks or more than 9 months. And clearly what seems to be somewhat of a cyclical problem is beginning to take on the form of a structural problem where for whether it's 14 million or 17 million official numbers, that's without the unofficial numbers of people who have dropped out, etc., without computing all the components of race within that, we are creating a sort of an additional, a new kind of underclass with this. So how do you take that and juxtapose and understand what is happening when there are these efforts to preclude the extension of unemployment benefits when you have this catastrophic reality of workers who are looking as hard as they can to find the elusive job unsuccessfully?
Well, I think you characterized the situation very well, and you know, how do you respond? Well, we at the National Employment Law Project and our partner advocates in the state, I think, are trying to respond in a way that organizations have responded in the past to sort of systematically, the systematic creation of underclasses, and that's to fight back. It's fairly galling to And it's been going on now for well over a year to see politicians starting to question the character of unemployed workers, to try and depict workers who have given 20, 30 years to a corporation and who are sending out hundreds of resumes and can't get so much as a response letter or never mind an interview, and to characterize these workers as chiselers, as unmotivated, as, you know, drug addicts who are not looking hard enough for work. This is the kind of rhetoric that we've seen at both the state and the national level, and what we're trying to do is to fight back with the truth. The U.S. Department of Labor up until a few months ago didn't keep track of what was happening to workers who were unemployed 2 years or longer. This recession has changed all of that. 45% of everybody who becomes unemployed is out of work for at least 6 months, and nearly a third of them are out for a year or more. These are concepts that were unknown in the world of unemployment before this. The highest long-term unemployment ever was before this recession was in the early 80s. So this is completely new ground, and you know, we're seeing, I mean, one thing we're sort of calling out employers on and employment agencies is what's become a new brand of discrimination. That is employment want ads that specify only currently employed need apply or will not consider workers with less than who have been unemployed more than 3 months or 6 months. I mean, as if the unemployed don't have enough going against them and trying to get back into this economy and sort of regain a toehold somewhere where they fell off the economic ladder. To have business actually institutionalize these kinds of policies is crazy. And we've been involved with Representative DeLauro in Connecticut and Senator Blumenthal up there as well in introducing legislation called the Fair Employment Opportunity Act of 2011, which basically prohibits discrimination against workers solely because they're unemployed or because they've been unemployed for a specific length of time. But and that's a small piece of an overall problem. But I think we have to, as sort of commentators on the economy and the workforce, I mean, we need to call out business and politicians when they start turning this problem that was in fact created by corporations and then turning it back on workers. Workers didn't create the mess that they're trying to dig out of now. The least we can do is enact policies that support them as they try to get back to a place where they can support their families.
And, of course, we see an increasing number of workers who have exhausted their unemployment insurance, even the federal extensions. What do you see in the next period of time? Do you think more states will start to constrict their unemployment insurance? And what happens when the, right till at now, the federal extensions only go till the end of this year? So look into your crystal ball and see what are the dangers in the future.
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball, but let me say that taking the sort of the second part of your question first, the current array of federal extensions expires at the end of this year. So they were basically put into place last December as part of the deal for the extension of the Bush-era tax cuts. We'll, applaud the president for standing up for unemployed workers at that time. We heard early on in the debt ceiling deliberations that the administration had actually put forth a proposal to reauthorize the federal extended unemployment benefits through next year, back when there was talk about a larger deal or what is now being termed a grand bargain. That discussion dissipated. So, you know, unemployment insurance, like any other federal program, is going to be, you know, really examined, I think, through the lens of the very restrictive budgetary climate around this new super committee and so on. There's going to be an all-out campaign to reauthorize the program. But the bottom line is it was reauthorized last year when unemployment was in the 9% range. We're still at 9%. Not much has changed in terms of the needs of the long-term unemployed since last year. I think I mentioned there's 7.5 million people collecting unemployment benefits right now. But about half of them are on one of the federal extension programs. So if you pull the plug on that program in December, you're talking about putting really millions of families at the risk of falling into poverty pretty much overnight in the first quarter of 2012. So there'll be a big push there. The states, I think, are going to come there's 30 states that are insolvent. About 10 of them made some sort of either benefit cuts or restrictions on eligibility in the last few months. I expect that there'll be activity in most of the remaining 20 in 2012. The only thing that can really avert that is for Congress to get serious about some sort of a federal financing solution for all of these insolvent trust funds. And there is some legislation in Congress that would do that, but it does not seem to be getting much traction at the moment. So hopefully we'll wage the good fight to keep the extensions going into 2012, because long-term unemployment is projected to continue at high rates through next year, and we're going to, as I say, call out the business interests that have been pushing through these benefit cuts in the states.
Well, in December 31st, 2011, these unemployed workers en masse will be experiencing the cessation or the end of the expiration of their extended unemployment benefits. And Congress better get it together to make sure that there is another extension. And, of course, we're going to have to get into the discussion, which is really the bedrock of this jobs, jobs, jobs. And we're going to try to do that as Building Bridges continues. But, George Wentworth, thank you very much for joining us. George is a staff attorney with the National Employment Law Project that is always on the case for not only unemployed workers, but workers who had suffered all kinds of offenses and discriminations and so on within the job market. So I strongly encourage you to pull up their website and see the other things that they've been working on. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You want to listen to a bassist. Alex Blake is your man. Very often plays with Randy Weston, one of the real great piano players, and has his own albums with his own trio as well. Alex Blake, just giving you a small taste of his incredible competencies. Well, now we turn our attention to
I'm at Goldman Sachs headquarters on West Street at about noon. It's after the trial of Goldman Sachs at Occupy Wall Street site at Liberty Square. And there's a large crowd blocking the front door to Goldman Sachs. Try to find out what's going on. A number of people sitting down in front of the doorway. The cops are telling them they may be arrested. About a dozen people sitting down. Chris Hedges is one of the ones sitting down.
Can we tell you something? Everybody back up.
Back up. We have to do our job. Get everybody off the thing.
Go do your job.
Yes.
Guys. Take it back from Goldman Sachs. Take it back from Goldman Sachs.
Who do you serve? Who do you protect? Who do you serve? Who do you protect? Hey, Mary, how are you? You were at the trial, right?
Absolutely.
What happened?
We had witnesses from throughout the community. We had a DC-37 member who was laid off from the DOE testify. We had a gentleman who had been a victim of, and still is a victim of, mortgage fraud give testimony. We had people from the nonprofit sector who have been affected by budget cuts talk about how basically the banks got bailed out and the working people continue to suffer from these cuts.
And the verdict on Goldman Sachs?
It was quite a lengthy verdict in which we found Goldman Sachs guilty. We demanded that their top executives serve jail time and that they return the $78 billion to the American people that they effectively stole.
And what's happening here?
So here we actually marched to read the verdict to Goldman Sachs. And now what's happened is we were accompanied by Dr. Cornell West and the witnesses to read the verdict. And what's happening here now is a group of people from OWS are doing a civil disobedience lockdown at the door to effectively try and shut down Goldman Sachs for the day.
Talking with Mario Rodriguez from DC-37 AFSCME at Occupy Wall Street. Dragging one of the protesters away.
Shame.
I think if two or three cops remove each protester, they're not going willingly. Being led away. Saying it's the people in this building, in Goldman Sachs, that should be arrested for their crimes before, during, and after the Wall Street crisis. I think that's the last of the protests. There's a woman being led off right now.
Who do you serve? Who do you protect? Who do you serve? Who do you protect?
The criminals are inside.
The criminals are inside. The criminals are inside. The criminals are inside.
Excuse me. Were you at the trial before now?
I was at the trial.
Can you tell us what happened?
There was some history that was given behind what had been done, what atrocities had been done to the people. And then there were five plaintiffs who came up and explained the ways that they personally had been abused by Goldman Sachs. And then we consensuously came to a verdict that found them guilty of stealing public funds and demanded that they return $78 billion.
So now the protesters are being arrested. Do you think that's right, or do you think Goldman Sachs should be arrested?
Personally, I think Goldman Sachs should be arrested. I don't think that the protesters should be arrested.
Where do you think the movement goes from here?
Hopefully into every community all around the world, with GAs spreading and people seeing the strength of direct democracy and consensus-style decision-making.
GAs are what?
GAs are the General Assemblies.
All power to the General Assembly.
All power to the General Assembly, because we can make the change ourselves, and we don't need people above us telling us how to do it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm speaking with
Austin.
Austin, good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too.
Okay. last woman being let off.
Mic check!
We're trying!
To get a march going again!
Gather everybody here!
The drummers will lead!
We're gonna start marching!
Over 100 people here marching now back to Occupy Wall Street site at Liberty Square.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.